We gather this morning in June to worship in freedom and to rejoice in the liberty we may oft take for granted. We welcome all who enter this house of the Spirit. Together, let us affirm our commitment to causes of justice, equality, and liberty throughout our world, that all people might know the freedom to be who they truly are. And in this spirit of freedom, I light our simple chalice flame, connecting us with liberal religious communities the world over and honouring all those who struggled to achieve the freedoms we enjoy today. One flame, many lamps. So good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Essex Church and to this community of Kensington Unitarians. Can I especially welcome people who may be listening to this podcast at some time in the future. May you feel a connection with us across the miles and across the days. So we gather here from our separate lives, and together I think we form something more, a body of people committed to matters of the Spirit, opening ourselves to the power of community, willing to step aside from everyday concerns and go just a little deeper. I welcome you all, whoever you are, however you are feeling, whatever burdens you are carrying, and wherever you may be going in life. For now, let us celebrate that we are here together. I've heard various versions of this story that I'm going to tell now, which ends with the message that the truth can set us free. I think you can create other messages from this same story. It's the story of a beautiful and powerful tiger who was captured by a cruel, cruel person who put that tiger in a cage and each day would bring out food and water to feed the caged tiger. And sometimes the tiger would see her own reflection in the bowl of water and she'd say, "My, I must be a beautiful tiger." But when her captor heard her say this, he would lie and he'd tell her, "No, you're not a beautiful tiger. You're very ugly. You're a pitiful creature." And sadly, the tiger would believe the man. Some days after she ate her food, she'd walk back and forth in her small cage and she'd feel the energy and power moving in her body and she'd say, "My, I must be a powerful tiger." But when the man heard her say this, he'd lie and he told her, "No, you're weak and puny, you're a pitiful creature." And sadly, the tiger would believe the man. Then, one day, when the man was nowhere around, a lion happened to walk by the cage. The lion saw the tiger inside and spoke to her. "Beautiful and powerful tiger, what are you doing lying about in this cage?" "Don't make fun of me," replied the tiger. "I know I'm neither beautiful nor powerful." "No, I'm not making fun of you," said the lion. "You are surely the most beautiful and most powerful tiger I have ever seen. I'm only surprised to see you lying here when you're clearly strong enough to break out of that cage." "You really think I could break out of here?" asked the tiger. "Quite easily, I should think," replied the lion. And suddenly it seemed to that tiger that she felt her energy and strength moving through her body. She began to pace back and forth in her cage and then, almost without thought, leapt against that cage door and it flew open without any resistance. Once outside, she seemed dazed. "That cage did not even have a lock on it," she said, "and I spent so much of my life stuck in there, and the door wasn't even locked." And the lion looked at her with soft brown eyes and said, "Those kinds of traps don't need locks, for it is the lies we believe in that keep us in our cages, and it is the truth that sets us free." Interested to hear what meaning that story has for you. And it leads us now into a time of prayer and reflection. As I call on the divine spirit of life and love to be with us now and to bless all that we say and do together here this day. I pray for our unjust world. May the spirit of compassion help us to stay open, open as witnesses to the suffering of all peoples and all creatures of the world, the sufferings of the world herself. May the spirit of love melt cold hearts that trample on human rights. May the spirit of beauty help us to preserve the unique splendors of each country. May the spirit of wisdom help us to treasure the mystical insights of all religions. May the spirit of patience and endurance strengthen those who are oppressed and exiled from their homes. May the spirit of courage strengthen those who speak for those who have no voice. May the spirit of liberty dance in all human societies and relationships. May the spirit of unity help us to recognize people of every nation as sisters and brothers, and recognize our oneness with all creation. And in the spirit of justice, I invite you now to send your thoughts and prayers where you feel there is a need, be that places within yourself, in those you love, or in our wider world. And may the blessing of love and compassion flow through us this day to all beings. Amen.
These are some words from Shami Chakrabarti, who's Director of Liberty, Civil Liberties and Campaigning Organisation. Writers have always been a big part of liberty. Since our very beginnings as the National Council for Civil Liberties in 1934, they've played a key role in our battle to protect civil liberties and promote human rights in Britain. H.G. Wells, Vera Brittain, E.M. Forster, A.A. Milne, George Orwell and Aldous Huxley are just a few of the authors who supported liberty in the early years. And perhaps it's not surprising that those who write feel a special affinity with liberty's values and ideals. Now, we celebrate 80 years of the fight that is never done. Orwell's observations on the power of language, to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, is something that liberty has witnessed throughout its history. Extraordinary rendition wasn't sweet singing, but a chilling euphemism for kidnap and torture during the War on Terror. Waterboarding was never a seaside sport. Governments have twisted words to sanitize abomination and obscure outrage, but literature can sometimes change minds and behavior more convincingly than the most forceful examples of political polemic or even legislation.
Thank you. We're hearing from three people in this section. They all came from an article in the Guardian newspaper, which was, of course, set up by Unitarians in 19th century Manchester as a voice for civil liberty. I'm reading some words now by Maggie O'Farrell, an Irish writer, and she's referring to Delacroix's picture, which is on the front of your order of service sheet. She writes, liberty. For me, it conjures up not words, but an image of a woman in profile, her eyes focused, her expression grave. Delacroix painted Liberty as a dark-haired warrior with bare feet, uncovered breasts, arched brows, a bayoneted rifle in one hand, and holding aloft a revolutionary flag in her muscled other arm. But her face is turned away. The sky behind her is piled with storm clouds. She is looking back at her exhausted comrades, and beneath her feet are piled corpses. If the painting teaches anything, it is that liberty, as both concept and personification, is complex, slippery, and hard to attain. Before it is reached, blood will probably be shed, battles will be braved, storm clouds must gather. Perhaps paintings and images are easier to fall back on when reflecting on liberty. Words can be more difficult to comprehend. I don't know how to begin to process collocations such as, these are in inverted commas, tortured and imprisoned without trial, or gang raped by militia, or died in a detention centre. Yet these words are there every day in news reports. They must be read, they must be understood and remembered and retold. But how do I explain such things to my children when I can barely grasp such horrors myself? How do I break it to them that we live in a world where such atrocities are possible?
These words from Edward Snowden, who worked for the NSA, the National Security Agency, as a contractor, and told the world about the amount of covert surveillance that the agency was in fact carrying out. Today, an ordinary person can't pick up the phone, email a friend, or order a book without comprehensive records of their activities being created, archived, and analysed by people with the authority to put you in jail or worse. I know. I sat at that desk. I typed the names. When we know we're being watched, we impose restraints on our behaviour, even clearly innocent activities, just as surely as if we were ordered to do so. The mass surveillance systems of today, systems that preemptively automate the indiscriminate seizure of private records, constitute a sort of surveillance time machine, a machine that simply cannot operate without violating our liberty on the broadest scale, and it permits governments to go back and scrutinise every decision you've ever made, every friend you've ever spoken to, and derive suspicion from an innocent life. Even a well-intentioned mistake can turn the life upside down. To preserve our free societies, we have to defend not just against distant enemies, but against dangerous policies at home. If we allow scarce resources to be squandered on surveillance programmes that violate the very rights they purport to defend, we haven't protected our liberty at all. We have paid to lose it.
Here are just a few thoughts about liberty. It's got a horrible feeling about preaching to the converted about it. If you have a Unitarian congregation, I suspect we are all, as they say, singing from the same hymn sheet on this issue. But this is just a little exploration of some points that maybe we'll talk more about over coffee afterwards. And there's a yellow sheet for you to fill in some of your own thoughts and then maybe transfer them to pieces of paper next door. It would be very interesting to hear your thoughts about liberty. So, you will well know, since it's been celebrated absolutely everywhere, that we are celebrating the 800th anniversary of the sealing of Magna Carta, the Great Charter, here in England. We held a service of celebration for this Great Charter earlier in the year. Magna Carta, you'll probably remember, was an agreement reluctantly reached by King John at the insistence of his barons, drafted largely by the then Archbishop of Canterbury. The king never intended to stick to it, by all accounts. He was just trying to wriggle out of an awkward situation at the time. And yet, almost by chance, it's remained as part of our legal framework and has helped create the British Constitution. Some of its key features are to prevent the arbitrary misuse of power. It established trial by one's peers, trial by jury, and it strengthened the concept known as habeas corpus, no imprisonment without trial. Compared with 1215, life for most of us here in Britain today, I think I'm safe to say, is pretty good. We've got lots of things right, but that perhaps makes us even more aware of what is wrong, both here and in other lands. The cause of liberty the world over is indeed the fight that is never done, as author E.M. Forster described it way back in 1934. The fight that is never done. That was the year when hunger marchers converged on Hyde Park, and as a response to concerns about previous police brutality, the National Council for Civil Liberties was formed. They met the marchers in Hyde Park and bore witness to what happened. If my reflections have any clear message today, it's perhaps that bearing witness to the use and the misuse of power in our world will always be required of decent people. We are thinking, reflective creatures, and I think we can't turn away when wrongs are committed. I think we also have a responsibility to educate ourselves about complex issues. When I think back to the terrible suffering in Europe post-World War II that led to the drafting of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights way back in 1948, it declared that everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person, and it enshrined the principle of freedom of conscience and religion that, of course, is the core of our Unitarian faith. Now, in 21st century Britain, the very term human rights is used in a derogatory way by some elements of our so-called free press. Now, it looks for now that our new government is rethinking their proposal of leaving the European Convention on Human Rights and replacing that with a new Bill of Rights, somewhat ominously missing out the word human, I think, for this country. It's beyond my ability to understand all the complex legal issues involved, but let's not allow complexity to hide realities from us. Let's keep reading and talking and educating one another so we do start to understand just what's going on. I was lucky to catch a TV conversation this week from the Hay Literary Festival. I don't know if anybody saw this one, with Stephen Fry, Sandy Toksvig and Mark Goldring, Oxfam's chief executive, discussing Magna Carta and what new clauses they'd include in it if they could rewrite it today. It's still available on iPlayer. It's really worth watching. Sandy Toksvig emphasised the needs of women the world over and the value that societies would gain if they aimed for equality of opportunity for girls and women. Mark Goldring reminded us of inequalities the world over. You'll have heard various versions of these statistics again and again. 80 people in the whole world have the same wealth as 3.5 billion other people. Here in Britain, 5 families have the same wealth as 13 million people. Goldring described Britain as one of the most unequal of developed countries. We are the 6th richest country in the world, and yet we have some quite shocking levels of poverty. He reminded us that inequality in a country makes everyone less happy, both rich and poor. It's not economically efficient to have such a divide between people, and the more power that is held by a few, the more they tend to reinforce their privilege. Can there truly ever be liberty when there is such inequality? Probably not. I wonder what global issues concern you the most at the moment. Unitarians have long campaigned for religious freedom the world over, and more recently for the equal rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgendered people to express their love. We know the continuing inequalities of gender that see women and girls receiving less education, less healthcare and less freedom to be themselves. There are issues of sustainable living here on a planet so badly affected by our human behaviour. And developing countries rightly challenge our hypocrisy when so-called Western developed nations attempt to stop them from industrialising as we did in the 19th century when the attention of the world was not upon us. No, liberty is not an easy topic. And it has its underbelly too. I mentioned earlier the National Council for Civil Liberties, now known as Liberty, a very important campaigning organisation in this country. One of the reasons for its name change was the adverse publicity when it was discovered that the Paedophile Information Exchange organisation was affiliated to the National Council for a number of years. If we define liberty as the freedom to follow our own will, unconstrained by others, then it stands to reason that human society has to add a second clause, establishing our liberty to do as we wish, so long as it does not hurt others. This is the argument put forward by philosopher John Locke, and we should enjoy its clarity and its simplicity for a moment. Because, of course, real life gets so much messier and more complicated than that. We're free to do as we wish, so long as it does not hurt others. Alas, with 21st century liberty issues, it's not always clear where hurt might lie. We heard some words written by Edward Snowden earlier on, whose whistleblowing, usefully, I still think, revealed just how much information is being gathered by security services. Yet only today on the news, it's announced that because of his exposure of encrypted information, British spies have had their cover blown by Russia and by China. Is this true? Does it matter? How do we weigh up the freedoms of one group over another? So you'll get no answers from me today, but I have a strong conviction that we need as much as ever strong people to stand up against the powers that be. In 1215, it was the aggrieved barons and an Archbishop of Canterbury who'd done his thinking about the nature of kingship. In 21st century, I think it is up to you and me. Amen. A closing blessing with words by Richard Carlyle, a member of our Wakefield congregation. As we leave this place, may the warmth of our sharing comfort us in the weeks to come. May our commitment to each other sustain us in our daily lives. May we rise to the challenges we set for ourselves and for each other. And may we return refreshed and renewed to this place. Amen. Go well and blessed be.